Hello, and welcome to the Lives of Women in History. My name is April Rogers.
Aquila Glover and six rescuers have been on the trail for almost 3 weeks, trudging through deep snow by day and camping on it at night. Finally, they've caught sight of their destination. It's February 18th, and James Reed's team is still on its way. They're moving as fast as they possibly can on snowshoes. When Glover's team crosses the summit, they head downhill toward the lake. They can see curls of smoke rising from the cabins, indicating that fires are burning inside. But the camp looks completely empty. Quote, "At sunset, we crossed Truckee Lake on the ice. We raised a loud hello." End quote. Daniel Rhodes. He and his brother John were both Mormons, and they'd sworn to rescue the Donner Party, or they were going to die trying. People slowly began to emerge from cabins and from holes in the snow. Sometimes the pioneers would spend daylight hours in this way. Outside their windowless cabins, they'd cocoon themselves into the insulating snow, and they'd turn their faces to the sun. To the rescuers, it seemed like the dead was rising. Quote, "They were gaunt with famine, and I can never forget the horrible, ghastly sight they presented." End quote. Daniel Rhodes. The pioneers couldn't trust the vision that was before them. Many of them in their numbness or near delirium because they were so close to death. Quote, "The first woman spoke in a hollow voice, very much agitated." End quote. Daniel Rhodes. "Are you men from California, or do you come from heaven?" one of the Donner Party, rising from the snow, asked. Rescuers had to guard the food to keep people from taking too much and possibly gorging to death. The desperate immigrants were stealing everything they could find. Quote, "They even stole the buckskin strings from the party's snowshoes and ate them," end quote, one of the rescuers. Now, a rescuer, his name was Reason Tucker, they called him Dan, hiked the Donner family tents at Alder Creek. He was greeted by one of the Donner's hired hands, a teenager named Jean-Baptiste Trudeau. He was probing the snowdrifts with a long stick. Clearly, Tucker had arrived with food just in time. The young man exclaimed that he couldn't find a forgotten ox to thaw and cook. The Donners were going to be forced to eat the dead. Probably not for the first time. Now, at both camps, people began to press the rescuers for news about the forlorn hope. They were told only that the snowshoers had been detained by badly frostbitten feet. Glover knew their exact fate, but he had coached his men to lie. He felt if those still trapped learned the whole truth about the 6-day trip that took 33 days and about how 8 of the 15 had perished, he felt that they might just give up right then and there. Now, not everyone could leave with the first rescue party. Glover had stored food along the trail for the return trip, but it wasn't enough to feed all 40 people who were still alive at both camps. In his typical understatement, Patrick Breen wrote in his diary, quote, "Seven men arrived from California yesterday evening with some provisions, but left the greater part on the way," end quote. The Reeds were part of the group that left first. All of them, including Margaret, were especially longing to meet up with James Reed in the mountains. Now, Glover had predicted that James and his rescue team were just a few days behind, and the Breens sent out their sons, Edward and Simon. The rest of the family stayed behind. They were still possessing enough food to tide them over. At Alder Creek, Tamison and Betsy Donner volunteered to remain with their younger children. They didn't really want to abandon Tamison's husband, George. He was clinging to life despite the massive infection in his arm. It's February 22nd, 4 days after they've arrived. Glover's men lead 7 adults and 16 children toward the summit. Now, what happened within a few miles was another blow to Margaret Reed's heart. her 3-year-old son, Tommy, just could not walk on the trail of packed snow. The rescuers had packed the snow in. Unfortunately, his short legs were sinking into the adult footprints, and each step was a climb. Yet no one could or would carry him in their arms on a journey that might last a week. Even his own mother didn't have the strength. After conferring with Aquila Glover, Margaret agreed to send Tommy back with Patty to look after him. Glover would deliver them to the Breens with a minimum of food for their keep. Margaret trusted Glover because he was a Mason just like her husband. Patty sized up the situation very quickly. 4 days shy of her 9th birthday, she'd already experienced more than most people do in a lifetime. Just like her sister Virginia, she was more concerned about her mother than herself. Quote, "Ma, if you never see me again, do the best you can," end quote. Patty Reed. Quote, "That was the hardest thing yet. The men said they could hardly stand it. It made them all cry, but they said it was better for all of us to go on," end quote. Virginia Reed. Waiting for the second rescue party, even the well-stocked Breens were actually starting to run out of possibilities. Sadly, their pet dog, Towser, finally went into the kettle. Others had passed that point and were now moving, at last, to the extreme. The very first mention of cannibalism at Truckee Lake appears to be around February 26th. It comes from an entry of Patrick Breen's diary. Quote, "Mrs. Murphy said yesterday that she thought she would commence on Milt and eat him. I don't think that she has done so yet. It is distressing," end quote. Pretty soon, Lavina Murphy and her family did butcher Milt Elliott's body to eat his heart and his liver. He'd been dead and frozen for over 2 weeks. The Murphys had no way of knowing that the forlorn hope had also resorted to cannibalism 2 months earlier, nor did they know that cannibalism had begun at Alder Creek on the dead bodies of Jacob Donner and some of the family's employees, which included Samuel Shoemaker. One example actually lingered in the memory of 4-year-old Georgia Donner. She remembered decades later how her Aunt Betsy, quote, "came down the steps one day saying to my mother, 'What do you think I cooked this morning?' Then answered the question herself, 'Shoemaker's arm,'" end quote. Those who cannibalize seem to have observed this instinctive rule. They would carefully identify the remains so that people would not have to eat their own relatives. Under this code of honor, the Donners might have cannibalized less because many people at Alder Creek were related. More bad luck began to follow Virginia's group of refugees as they struggled to find their way out of the mountains and into the sunny valley of California. Wild animals had eaten the food carefully cached by the rescuers, so the group divided what little remained in their packs and sent 2 men ahead for more. They were climbing, quote, "a great high mountain, as straight as their steps in the snow, up to their knees," end quote. These were Virginia's words on a daily ration of 1 ounce of smoked beef and 2 spoons of flour. 5-year-old Jimmy Reed was barely better off than Tommy had been. Quote, "James walked the whole way over all the mountain in the snow up to his waist. Poor little fella, he would have to place his knees on the hill of snow between each step of the snowshoes and climb over. He was too small to reach from one step to the other," end quote. Virginia Reed. The boy's persistence made him a favorite. The rescuers assured Jimmy that life would be better in California, and his pa would buy him a horse, they assured him, and Jimmy would never have to walk anywhere if he didn't want to. Quote, "we were, mother and I, very much afraid that he would give out," end quote. Virginia Reed. It was a realistic fear. Another small child had just died. Quote, "we had talked the matter over and had decided what we would do. We encouraged him in every way, kept telling him that every step he took, he was getting nearer Papa," end quote. That promise at least would soon come true. 6 days The group had finally crossed the mountain pass. They'd scaled the wall of snow that trapped them. They were still in the mountains. To be sure, they were struggling through snow drifts. They were hemmed in on narrow paths. However, James Reed and the second rescue party were just a few miles away. Quote, "Is Mrs. Reed with you? Tell Mr. Reed is here." End quote. Thus, the forever formal James Reed announced himself to an advanced member of Glover's party. Virginia and her mother were more emotional. After all, they'd been separated from James Reed for 4 torturous months. Quote, "My mother dropped on the snow. I started to run to meet him and kept falling down, but finally was folded in my dear father's arms once more. Your mother, my child, where is she?" I pointed towards her. I could not speak. End quote. Virginia Reed. Pretty soon, James Reed and his men were surrounded. Later that day, he recorded the scene in his diary. Quote, "I cannot describe the death-like look they all had. Bread, bread, bread was the begging of every child and grown person except my wife." End quote. James Reed. In anticipation of this moment, James Reed had baked bread, and the pioneers tore into it. The day was not so happy for William McCutcheon, the Donner Party member who had set off for Sutter's Fort with Charles Stanton back in October. Mac had returned as part of Reed's rescue team, and he anxiously scanned the group for signs of his wife and baby, but learned that they had died. The Reed's reunion had to be brief. Quote, "When my father heard that Patty and little Tommy were still in the mountains, he could hardly stop long enough. He was so much afraid something would happen or they would die before he could reach them." End quote. Virginia Reed. James Reed and the other rescuers quickly moved on to Truckee Lake. With renewed energy, the survivors continued to Johnson's Ranch, the first white settlement west of the Sierra. Here, at last, was the California that Virginia had been promised. Quote, "We were out of the snow, could see the blessed earth and green grass again. How beautiful it looked! We stayed a day or so, getting the horses and mules ready to ride to Sutter's Fort. Just think of it, to ride, no more dragging over the snow, when we were tired, so very tired, but green grass, horses to ride, and plenty to eat." End quote. Virginia Reed. For one teenager, a stepson of Jacob Donner, plenty was too much. A body in starvation is easily strained. It can process only small amounts of food at first. William Hook found a cache of food, secretly ate all he could, then died in agony trying to digest it. His death was a warning to the others to go slowly. March 1st, Patty's sitting in the sun on the cabin roof when she spots her father and 9 other rescuers approaching. She cries out happily, but fell as she ran toward him because she was so weak. Inside the cabin, Tommy was near death. James Reed fed and bathed him. He also bathed Louis Kesburg, the man who had once wanted to hang him. 2 days later, the children were stronger. Patty was able to take on a pleasant job just before the second group left, as Eliza Donner recalled. Quote, "Mr. Reed's little daughter, Maddie, appeared carrying in her apron a number of newly baked biscuits, which her father had just taken from the hot ashes of his campfire. Joyfully, she handed one to each inmate." End quote. The inmates, as Eliza Donner called them, departed on March 3rd, but not all of them. A dozen or so stayed behind, many because they were too weak to move. Tamison Donner was in decent shape, but would not be parted from her dying husband, so she remained with her 3 little girls. This final group would wait for a third rescue team or die waiting. No one escaped easily. After 2 days on the trail, the immigrants faced a blizzard. James Reed described it this way, quote, "A hurricane that has never ceased for 10 minutes at a time during one of the most dismal nights I ever witnessed. At one time, our fire was nearly gone, and had it not been for Mr. McCrutchen's exertions, it would have entirely disappeared. The little half-starved, half-frozen, poor children would say, 'I'm glad we have got some fire. Oh, how good it feels. It is good out Our fire didn't go out. End quote. One child did die, and others, including the Breens, were too weak to continue. They decided to wait along the trail for a third rescue party. They would be forced to live in the snow pit and watch some of their members die and be cannibalized. However, the Reeds and five others pressed on. Now, James Reed was so worried about the dwindling supplies that he scraped the seams of the empty food sacks and he saved the crumbs in the thumb of a mitten. Patty was weakening, but insisted on walking until she dropped. Quote, I see angels and stars. End quote. She cried out in a stupor. Her father revived her with the hidden crumbs, and then he carried her the rest of the way to Johnson's ranch. Soon, they were reunited with the rest of the family and put that nightmare behind them. William Eddy had recovered well enough so he could lead a third rescue party. Ironically, it actually included the only other male survivor of Forlorn Hope, William Foster. These two men, once enemies, forged a tragic bond on arriving at the cabins. The thought of rescuing their families must have sustained them as they trudged back through the mountain that had almost killed them. They found the worst sight possible. Their wives and young sons, for whom they had returned, were dead and cannibalized. It was a horrible thought that struck Eddy and Foster. They suspected that Louis Kesburg might have cold-bloodedly killed their boys, not even waiting for them to die naturally. There's no evidence that Kesburg murdered anyone for food. Still, it is easy for them to imagine the rage and despair of two fathers who had already been through so much. Eddy swore revenge on Kesburg. He vowed that he would kill him if both of them managed to make it to California. Would Eddy and Foster have rescued Kesburg given the sickening circumstances? It didn't matter. Kesburg was too sick to travel now. He would have to survive on his own. His wife had gone ahead with the first rescue party. Lavina Murphy, the forceful widow who had been the first to cannibalize at Truckee Lake, couldn't tend him either. She was too ill to move. Eddie's group ended up rescuing only young Simon Murphy and the three little Donners, Frances, age 6, Georgia, age 4, and Eliza, age 3. The girl's mother, the smart and vibrant Tamsin, had to choose between accompanying them or staying with her elderly, dying husband. Tamsin stayed. Maybe she felt that her children were safe with others, but only she could nurse her husband. Exactly what prompted her decision is one of the great mysteries of the Donner Party. Tamsin did keep a diary during the journey, but no one ever found it. George Donner died the day after the rescuers left, and Lavina Murphy died soon after. Some people believe that once these potential witnesses were gone and eaten, Kesburg felt free to kill Tamsin Donner to keep himself alive. Did he murder her? Did he burn her diary? Which would have been a fascinating and invaluable record of the entire group. Did Tamsin burn it herself? One of her daughters recalled her mother shredding bits of paper to kindle a fire in the ordeal's darkest days. These are mysteries that will never be solved. There is absolutely no question that Kesburg prevailed. In April, a fourth rescue team arrived. What they found, according to rescuer William O'Fallon's reports, included books, calico cloth, tea, coffee, shoes, ammunition, household goods, and kitchen furniture. The body of George Donner was carefully wrapped in a clean white sheet. Tamsin Donner's body was nowhere to be found. Quote, we were obliged to witness sights from which we would have fain turned away and which are too dreadful to put on record. End quote. The rescuers escorted Louis Kesburg and Kesburg alone over the mountain. Group by group, the survivors made their way to Johnson's Ranch, then to Sutter's Fort, where they would recover. For the first time in many months, they could enjoy the simple luxuries of warmth, dry clothes, and restful sleep. Like Virginia, they could appreciate the blessed earth and green grass again, and plenty to eat. With the last survivor rescued, the final numbers could be tallied. The Donner Party numbered 90 in all, 88 immigrants plus Lewis and Salvador, the Miwok, who joined the group in October. Now, some historians have actually put the total at 89, preferring not to count Virginia's grandmother, Sarah Keyes, because she died early in the trip of natural causes. 81 were trapped in the mountains. Of the 90 people, 47 survived and 43 died. 6 of the deaths took place before California and 2 just after reaching safety. One of the latter was unfortunate. A boy, he ate too much food too quickly. The rest of the victims died in the snows, either while entrapped or during rescue attempts. Now, curiously, the death rate was much higher for men and boys than for women and girls. Of the 55 males in the full group, more than half of them died, 32 in all. Of the 35 females, about a third died, 11 in all. 58% of the males died, while only 31% of the females perished. Women were almost twice as likely to have survived. So one possible explanation is social. While some men in the group were unattached, all the women and girls traveled in families, which provided support. Many of the women, like Margaret Reed and her daughters, were mothers and older sisters who were fighting to stay alive for the sake of their young ones. Quote, "The mothers were the real heroes," end quote, Patty Reed. Now, the men, regardless of their marital status or age, also fought for survival for themselves and for others. More men than women went on rescue missions, for example. That exposed them to more risk and in turn to a higher chance of death. Another possible reason for the women's higher survival rate is physiological. Females, especially after maturity, typically have more body fat than males and thus more reserves to draw on. And because they are usually smaller than men, they require less food to subsist. Now, age also mattered. The chances of survival were better for the young, but not the youngest. Of the 90 participants, 43 were teenagers and children, of whom about 2 in 3 survived. Most of the young people who died, 10 boys and 5 girls, were under 5 years old. Their young age may explain their vulnerability to hunger, illness, and the extreme cold. Survival was bittersweet for many of the young survivors. More than half of them lost both parents and arrived in California as orphans. In the end, only 2 families made it to California with no loss of life at all, the Breens and the Reeds.
Thank you for joining me for another episode of The Lives of Women in History. Please consider sharing with your friends and family and leaving a review. You can send me a message at womensettlers@gmail.com, or if you use the Anchor app, you can send me a voicemail. See you next week.